from the Skyline Studios, high above Columbus and Wacker Drive. It's me, Anna DeVlantis, here on WGN. Happy you're with us. It's 107, and we have a number of things to get to, including, I want to tell you what's coming up on the show, and I think we have gotten to the bottom of that Joe Biden lying dog face pony soldier comment. I think we now know where it's from. And I don't know if you saw Stephen Colbert had so much fun with it last night, and we're going to play a little bit of that, too. But first, I want to ask you. I have a Girl Scout. You may know about this. You know about eating Girl Scout cookies, I'm sure. I do, too.
I eat too many of them.
My 8-year-old, first year, selling her Girl Scout cookies this year.
Are you selling more than she is?
Well, that, you know, hey, you just spoke to the core issue here, Steve Bertrand. I feel like it should be their responsibility, partially, right? I mean, I remember going door to door growing up and selling my Girl Scout cookies, and you had to learn your little pitch, your sales pitch. You got questions asked sometimes, you know, what troop are you in and what do you do and what do you like about scouting and which are the favorite cookies? And, you know, there's a little bit of salesmanship that was learned in the process.
All first year moms feel that way, and then they're beaten down and they just.
To bring it to work, put it in the break room and guilt everybody you work with.
Right, exactly.
Yes, I'm not there yet. I'm at this like teaching moment thing, and I feel like I'm sure I will exactly do what you just said. But so what we did this year was the family and the friends bought them. I don't know if you know this. Now they have digital sales. So the kids do a video at least. Post that and you can forward it.
Well, that's learning some skills. You have to learn how to shoot the video, upload the video.
You got to come up with your pitch.
Right.
Still, you got to do that. That's a good life skill.
Taking some of the leg work out of going door to door.
But we saved, we bought extra boxes because we thought, again, Steve, back to your point, she's going to sell some boxes on her own. So we're going to look for a spot maybe in the neighborhood. I don't know. We don't have the spot yet, but someplace where she can sell her cookies and learn about that whole thing.
I think that's a great idea. You still want her to sell person to person.
Right. And I thought, you know, there's some restaurants in the neighborhood. Maybe somebody kind enough will let us sell them somewhere. I don't know. Have you had any experience doing this? Is there a great place to sell Girl Scout cookies?
I've noticed Girl Scout cookies being sold outside of a Costco or...
See them in grocery stores.
Yes.
I was just at Jewel over the weekend. I saw a little family there, real cute, and so hard to pass by them. And you're like, I got to get you cookies.
What about the lobby?
Even though I have a whole house full of cookies.
What about the lobby of the building?
Yeah, no, it's a small building, 6 units.
Here at work.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Right.
We're going to talk to the Tribune reporter, Ali Marati, coming up here on the show because she is profiling some kids who are entrepreneurs and they decided to do it. You know how recreational marijuana is now legal?
Yes.
They're doing it outside a dispensary.
See, that's fantastic. That is entrepreneurial skills already happening.
And I just thought, how brilliant is that? I want to see how it's working out for them, but it felt right, very entrepreneurial. So we're going to check in with them. But I want to just circle back briefly here on Joe Biden's comment to that college student. It's made so much news. We mentioned it on the show yesterday. We were talking about it in trending topics, and everyone looked at each other like, "Have you ever heard this before? Do you know this expression?" I'd never heard that expression before, and I think we finally figured out exactly where it's from. And no, it's not necessarily a John Wayne movie. John Wayne didn't say it. I guess a narrator used part of that phrase, but it was mentioned several times in a different movie. We're going to get to that, but let's listen in here what Stephen Colbert last night had to say about it.
The strangest moment in Biden's campaign resurrection tour came on Sunday when a voter asked him this.
How do you explain the performance in Iowa, and why should the voters believe that you can win the national election?
It's a good question. Number one, I was a Democratic caucus. You ever been to a caucus? No, you haven't. You're a lying dog-faced pony soldier.
What's going on inside Biden's head when he comes up with these insults? Let's see. What should I call her? Devious squirrel need kangaroo mailman? No. Tricky cat-fingered panther chef? No. Lying dog-faced pony soldier?
That's hilarious.
So good. Here's the second clip. We want to get to that here. He went on.
Believe it or not, this was not the first time Biden has used this particular weird insult. He had to explain it a couple of years ago at a rally.
As my brother, who loves to use lines from movies, the John Wayne movie, there's a line in the movie, the John Wayne movie, where the Indian chief turns to John Wayne and says, "This is a lion, dog-faced pony soldier."
See? There's a perfectly reasonable, rambling explanation. John Wayne and Indian chief. The only problem you could possibly have with this playful dog-faced pony language is that John Wayne's westerns don't include that quote.
Yes, that's the problem. So we've traced it back, and we now know. Here it is. It was actually a 1952 Tyrone Power movie, Pony Soldier.
Oh.
They used that phrase throughout the movie. So
and
there
we
go.
I'd like to mention, we were talking about this after the show yesterday, and our producer Jasmine says, oh, I think it came from a John Wayne movie.
You know, Jasmine has actually heard this before. Right away, she said, oh, yeah, I've heard that before.
And she kept it to herself. She didn't let us know.
No, I just had to think about it. Honestly, my grandmother, who is a patron with words, said a little bit of different way, or, well, I won't say because it's radio.
She cussed
a little bit. Yeah, she kind of messed that one up. But I remember her saying that she got it from the movie. And I was like, what movie, Grandma? But, you know, you don't question your grandma.
No,
you just let them talk.
No. You do not question a grandma. And we often hear those phrases and we start using them ourselves. This is what happens. So that's what it was. That's what it was from. The college student, by the way, is also giving interviews. The 21-year-old college student, Madison Moore, she's the one he directed that comment at. And she said, you know, I just, who cares who I am or what my experience is, just to answer the question. She was kind of upset about the way he handled it. But I think he didn't mean it
I think he was
in
trying to
way.
Be charming with it. I think he was trying to be lovable with the comment. It just came out wrong and it was rambling.
Correct on both accounts, I think. And I think just sort of puzzling in general to kind of dig that deep to find and use a comment
and
like that.
Jasmine, I hope your grandmother never had to call you that growing up.
No, there were other words used. But I'm here now, so.
We've got some ideas, 708. How about after a Blackhawks game? Wouldn't that be a good idea for selling the cookies? We were talking about Girl Scout
that would be
cookie
great.
Sales. I think you have to get permission if you're in a store or in front of a store and that kind of things. They come up to the church here, 847. That's a great idea. But I feel like there's a lot of competition in the neighborhood. Our old St. Pat's is our closest church. And that you see them. I mean, they're there. They're there. They're
what
there
happens
all the time.
To all the cookies that you buy at the end of the sale when you just have to buy the bunch?
Well, this is the problem because this is the problem. The longer they are in your house, the fewer cookies you have to sell, and that's what's happening. We're all eating them, and I get it. You know, it's like we got to unload these cookies. We're in Michigan, and the local troop sell at a brewery. And the owners got some boxes of cookies and offered customers beer cookie pairings. That is so cool to help the kids or help the girls sell the cookies.
I think maybe also if there's a food truck maybe selling on your street or nearby.
Yeah. You get to ask, see if you can kind of partner up. There's a lot of entrepreneurial ideas
here. Girl Scouts are so cute. I can't say no anyway. I'll have 20
It is hard, even though the boxes do get smaller every year, and they are expensive, but 90 cents of every box stays local with your troop, so that's good to know, and I still am trying to figure out a way to involve the sales part of it and have my daughter participate. At least for 1 year, Steve Bertrand, give me 1 year, and then I'm going to put that little sign-up sheet in the break room next time. We're going to talk to Ali Marotti from the Chicago Tribune. She's the one who did that great story on the Girl Scout who decided to, or a group of Girl Scouts, I should say, some young entrepreneurs who decided to set up shop outside a marijuana dispensary. How to go for them, coming up here on WGN Radio. We've been talking about best places to sell Girl Scout cookies, and people mentioned church, mentioned outside of a Blackhawks game. You know, it's always good to find a high trafficked area to kind of do that. I've been looking for one with my daughter, and then I saw this story by Ali Marotti in the Chicago Tribune. And basically talking about these very entrepreneurial girls who decided to set up their cookie selling operation outside a marijuana dispensary. Couldn't have done that last year, Allie, but it's pretty clever, pretty good.
Right, yeah. You know, it's interesting. I was talking to the manager of the dispensary, and he said that, you know, as marijuana has become legal recreationally here, obviously the stigma has started to fall away. And it's things like this that help with that, you know, seeing Girl Scouts selling cookies in front of a dispensary like they would any other business.
And the dispensaries, I guess last year you could have done it for the medicinal, not recreational marijuana dispensary. But this year I would imagine because of the amount of traffic in and out of those dispensaries, there would have been great cookie sales. How did they do?
For sure. So this group of Girl Scouts was in front of Dispensary 33, which is in the Uptown neighborhood right there on Clark Street. So really busy retail traffic area anyway. I talked to the mom of one of the Girl Scouts, and she said that, you know, it was their customers were a mix of the dispensary shoppers, but also just people passing by or even driving by on Clark Street. So they got a little bit of everyone, but they did well. I mean, she said they sold about 230 boxes. Yeah, they go at $5 a box here in the Chicago area. And she said it was a good day, but it wasn't as good as their best day last year. And that was when they posted up in front of a Mariano's and they sold more than 450 boxes. So I don't know. I mean, because of competition, I guess.
That's a crazy number of boxes, 450. And then the 200 this year. I mean, that's a huge number for these girls to sell.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, and she said they were out there about 4 hours, a little less than, on Saturday morning or Sunday morning. And at Dispensary 33, that dispensary there, that's when they're taking walk-ins. And, you know, I think the timing, so Girl Scouts in other states have done this too. California, Colorado, actually the Girl Scout Council in Colorado, for a while they had banned Girl Scouts from selling in front of dispensaries, but just last year they kind of reversed their guidance on that. So, you know, they weren't the first ones to think to do this, but they were taking advantage and kind of capitalizing on a couple of things here, right? Like, first of all, a dispensary customer wants a sugary snack to go with their dispensary purchase. Second of all, you know, a lot of the dispensaries are cash only. So people are walking in there with cash. It's really easy when they walk out to just spend that leftover on a box of cookies.
I hadn't even thought of that. They have a lot of cash, of course. That makes even more sense. And I guess I had heard about it happening in California, where weed has been legal recreationally for a little while, much longer, I should say. And so, of course, what a great idea to do it there. Were they the only ones you know of who were doing this? They're certainly not anymore, because I think moms like me are like, hey, that sounds like a good idea.
Right, exactly. So the dispensary actually said they had at least one troop coming at least once a weekend for the next month or so. So I think there's going to be more. There are a total of 9 dispensaries in the city selling recreational marijuana. So I wouldn't be surprised if there were more reaching out to the other ones. But, you know, it's interesting, actually, because all the dispensaries that are selling recreational now, they were the ones that were selling medical before. And some of those, because of the zoning rules around those, they were delegated to some not so high foot traffic areas. So some of them might not be as desirable of locations as this one on Clark Street, but I think it'll be interesting to see.
I always wonder how they kind of stake out their territory, because you would think everyone in the neighborhood knows where the high traffic areas are, and everyone would be competing for the same Mariano's or the same grocery store or the same church or the same kind of dispensary, I guess, now that idea is out there.
Yeah, for sure. The mom I was talking to, and I'm sure you know this too, was saying that, you know, some grocery stores don't allow, like, there's no solicitation types of clauses and stuff they have to abide by. So the ones that do allow it, she said the competition is very high. So I think they were excited to have kind of a new type of business that they could stake up in front of.
Yeah, and I was saying before, they do the digital sales now, too. So they do make it a little bit easier. You don't necessarily have to walk around with your cookie sheet anymore. You can send emails to approved people, and then they can buy your... You can buy your cookies based on a kid posting a video and that kind of thing. So I feel like they are making it easier and giving more opportunities to come up with ways to sell them, right? Because going door to door in February and January is not always that much fun. It isn't.
Right. I can't imagine it is.
Were you a Girl Scout, Allie? Because I was, and I did that door to door thing.
I was not, actually, yeah. So I feel like I'm learning this as I go, but I'm a frequent customer of the cookies. So
yes. What are you going with?
Samoas are one of my favorites, but I like the truffle oils too. Mm-hmm. It's always hard to choose. But they told me that the table sales, where they're setting up their tables in front of shops, they just started on Saturday in the Chicago area. So we're at the beginning of the season. So I think we probably will see a lot more of this.
Oh, that's good to know. I did see them in the grocery store this weekend. So that would be the first weekend. And so now you see them coming. Before I let you go, Allie, I know you do cover sort of the marijuana and cannabis in the legalization process and everything going on in the area. What can you tell us about how things are going? I think it initially got off to a start where you saw a lot of demand and maybe not the supply. You saw long lines. What's happening now?
Yeah, it's still kind of the same story at this point. You know, there are still shortages. Experts and people in the industry expect that to continue for 6 months to a year as the cultivation facilities or the grow facilities continue to ramp up. Everyone's trying to hire more people, so they just have more manpower to do that. And the lines still are there. You know, I mean, I don't think they're as long as they were at the beginning. People were waiting hours and hours. And depending on when you go, I've had some dispensaries tell me you can get in and out in 30 minutes. But, for example, I know that on Saturday morning, the line at the dispensary in Lakeview was 2 to 3 hours long. Wow. You know, so it just depends. There are still dispensaries that are selling recreational only on certain days to make sure that they're properly supplying their medical patients. I would suggest checking websites, checking social media of those dispensaries before you go to see what they have. Supplies are pretty limited, especially the flower, which you can smoke. So I think it'll be kind of interesting to see what plays out and how the market becomes more full. But there's still a ton of interest, a ton of demand from people. So yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting stuff. And I know the first marijuana lounge in Springfield opened up. You covered that, and that the city is still looking for places to allow people to legally smoke weed if they want to do that, that not all apartment complexes or places where people live allow that. So I think they're still figuring that out, right?
The city of Chicago is, yeah, and that one in Springfield hasn't opened yet. They just got the okay from the city of Springfield, so I think it'll be a while on that. But yeah, that is definitely something that the city is trying to figure out. There was a plan that they were looking at, but I don't think that ended up passing. And kind of the big thing right now is that a lot of the dispensaries that want to open up new locations in the city, they're having community meetings with the neighborhoods that they want to open up in and kind of trying to get the word out. And then we'll start to see eventually different kinds of businesses like transporter licenses and craft growers is what they're calling them, basically smaller growing facilities. So there's a lot coming down the pipe.
And do you think that they will come to some sort of decision pretty soon about Chicago? And do you think that we'll start seeing the lounges like that open up in the near future? Or is it just sort of this kind of slow, let's kind of contemplate this slowly as we move forward attitude?
I think it'll be a while because the city would have to approve something and then they would have to go through, I'm sure, some sort of zoning and licensing process that could take months. And as far as I heard, I'm not sure there is a plan in the works right now. So I think it'll be a while before we start seeing this.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all kind of new territory, and it was interesting to see right at the turn of, you know, right when the calendar turned, and I know you were out there then, the lines and the way it was kind of going, and I wondered, well, I wonder how this goes, because people are saying it's expensive to buy at dispensaries, there was some other, you know, the wait obviously was kind of fun at first to be part of the novelty of it, but that might wear off, I think.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, right, yeah, it's interesting, you know, and I'm still hearing, too, when I talk to the operators, that it's still people coming in. It's not just Chicagoans, right? They came out with the numbers for the first month, the sales numbers, and we were at almost 40 million sales in recreational marijuana for the first month here in Illinois, and about a quarter of that came from out-of-state residents. So I think that's interesting. A lot of people that have still never been to dispensaries that are still going for the first time, even though we're a month and a half in. So, yeah, I mean, there's still a lot of interest in a lot of people that haven't had that experience yet, so I think that they're not scared of the line.
What are you watching for next? Because aren't we seeing some others more open up in the city and suburbs? Is there going to be, by the end of the year, would you say double what we have, or what do you think, Allie?
Yeah, I think right now, so I mentioned that all of the existing medical marijuana dispensaries were able to start selling recreational if they wanted to. So they're also able to open second locations, and that's what we're seeing now. We've seen a couple of those open around the state, and then in the city, that's what these community meetings are being held about. So those are the first ones that we'll start to see. They have to go through, here in the city, a zoning approval process. They have to get their license from the state. So there's still a few steps ahead there. Also, there were applications accepted that should come out by May. For 75 brand new dispensaries that will be likely from people that weren't in the industry before. So those are kind of the two big things we have coming up next. And then, like I said, those other types of licenses, but that won't be until later in the year.
All right. Allie Marotti from the Chicago Tribune. She does a great job. And thanks for telling us about the Girl Scouts and bringing us up to speed on all things about recreational marijuana in the state.
No, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Allie. More to come here on WGN Radio, including some high-profile crimes in the news. We've been talking about crime on the CTA and the increased police presence. We've been talking about the Gold Coast, what happened yesterday, a carjacking yesterday afternoon. Sergeant Pete is here. He'll bring us up to speed on that. Plus, he has some deep background on a story making news today. Time for the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. 1:32 is the time, and we want to talk to Sergeant Pete Kokonis. He's here in studio. He's here regularly, and he updates us on all things police. You see him on Fox News and the cable news talking about crime as a crime analyst, but you're also here on WGN with us, and we're happy you're here. So we've got a couple of things, Sergeant Pete, to talk about, a number of things, and I hope we can get to all of them. The story I just want to throw out there, because every once in a while, There's a crime story that sort of makes you say, wow. I mean, and this one is in the Gold Coast yesterday. A carjacking happened at 2:30 in the afternoon. Is that when we're seeing them?
Russian Oak. Guy just walks up, pulls a gun, and takes the guy's car in the middle of the day on one of the busiest intersections in the city and drives away, leaves some guy standing there.
Masked man, and they say 2:40 in the afternoon. Left him standing there. He's okay. He's
nobody,
fine. His car's gone, and for that we're thankful that he is okay. But still, just seems brazen for that kind of thing to happen.
They're getting more brazen. They're getting more, if they want your car, they want your car to use for other crimes, or they want your car to lend out to other gang members on different days to use for same crimes. And the ultimate is to smash through a store window and take your products.
Take your belongings. In my neighborhood, there were a couple incidences recently of people breaking the window, not to get something they could see, but then to pop your trunk and get into the trunk, which is something I hadn't really heard too much about before. But just some things to be mindful of.
Right. There are crimes of opportunities.
Yeah.
Nobody's watching. Nobody's walking around. There's no lights on. Yeah, well, they got little tools. They shatter the window and pop the trunk and they'll go in and see what they can find.
Yeah, it's something to just be thinking about, unfortunately. Got to do that.
They even can get under a car and in less than 5 minutes cut out a catalytic converter and sell it.
Yeah, well, it's happening out there. There is a crime, a situation involving a former police officer that's making news today. And I know you have a lot of deep background on this particular situation. You've been following it for years. You actually knew the whistleblower who tried to out this person when she was on the force and tried to explain that one of her supervisors, Sergeant Ronald Watts, was doing some bad things. Now he's in the news again today because even more charges for alleged criminals he put away, are now being thrown out, these charges, because of why?
In 1999, we found there was systematic corruption regarding certain officers that were working with or for the Chicago Housing Authority. He wasn't at that time, but he was in that area. And we reported it, and we ended up putting up wires and surveillances on him and his team. And what happened, as we reported it and the investigation started, the investigation was like 3 or 4 years in when an FBI agent got compromised for an alleged theft of money that we used as bait money. And so everything that he gathered went out the window. So then they restarted another investigation. And the sad thing is this guy was, you know, running havoc in the Chicago Housing Authority for years. And now anybody, the allegations were made by some people, and some were very credible from people that I talked to, was if you didn't pay him off or give his group money, allegedly, then he would in turn lock you up and therefore take people that were not cooperating with him and giving him money and giving the streets to the people that were giving him money.
So he was shaking down people in the neighborhood to
right in the housing project. The people that need the most protection were the people that he was going after.
Right. So 90 convictions so far connected to Sergeant Ronald Watts, who did plead guilty, have already been tossed. Now today, the news that 12 more convictions tied to this corrupt former officer are also being wiped out.
There'll be many more. There'll be many more. And the weird thing is he did a short time in jail, and I'd love to know what happened to the money that he did steal and did make during this time.
Never found it?
Nope, they never found it. And he's moved from Chicago to Vegas to Colorado to Utah. He's moved all over the country. And I'd like to know where he's getting this money, because he's sure as heck not getting a pension.
Yeah, that's. I mean, it's just a sad chapter when you're putting away people for things like that. It's not never good for the police department. But I do want to shift, because the, as you know, and as I know, and as most people listening right now know, officers are here for our protection, and the overwhelming vast majority of officers do the right thing on behalf of citizens. They do. We spotlight a case like this. We're not afraid to talk about it, but we know that most officers, all officers that I know, would risk their own lives to save you, and they're there for us. And yet we're seeing attacks on officers because they're officers seemingly more frequent lately. We saw the case in New York as well, which I know you said. Assassination.
Guy said, I just don't like policemen. And he shoots one guy the night before and then walks into a police station and shoots up the police station. And thank God, only a lieutenant only got wounded. And then when he runs out of bullets, he throws himself on the ground and says, oops, here I am. You got me. But the statistically, a policeman is assaulted in this country every 10.3 minutes. So every 10.3 minutes, a policeman is assaulted. Now, if with everything that's going on and the supervision, the consent decrees, the ACLU, the oversight committees, and everything that are watching your police, and yet your police are still clearing or gathering 10,000 or more guns a year off the street, and we have no more stop and frisk. So now you've got changes in the department to make it easier for the commanders in the districts to worry about crime in their districts. They'll have more people assigned to them, like detectives and gang guys and narcotics guys. And that's what you need. You need enforcement. You need help from the community, most of all. And the police are not the bad guys. They're the first guys to run in when you call for help. Mm-hmm. And this past weekend was one of the worst, I think, in more than 10 years. You had 9 people murdered and 14 shot. And you had two men came from China. Were not from China. They were in Chinatown. And they were visiting here. They were doing their taxes. They don't even live here. A man walks up to them and asks them for their money. And they refuse or balk at the attempt, and he shoots and kills the two men. And since the woman turned over her wallet and things, he didn't bother to shoot them. And then you had the guy shot in the CTA platform, shot in the back.
Let's talk about that, because I think those types of we're seeing some of those crimes. The police have said that those kinds of crimes there is an uptick in CTA and transportation related crimes, so that they're trying to respond to this by doing more, by patrolling more. They're using cameras and technology, but they're also trying to do what they can to stem the tide of these types of crimes.
I can't see why you would refuse to or protest cameras being used. 11 people beat up a 68-year-old man on the L. 11 kids,
yeah.
Kicked them, beat them to get his property. The man that shot the people in Chinatown, they had him on film. If you have these cameras and you have this availability, you don't. The whole case says, well, that camera showed it was this guy, therefore we're going to court, prosecute, and he's going to go to jail. That's not the way it works. The camera's used as a tool, along with forensic evidence and physical evidence and witnesses and anything else that the police department and the detectives can gather together. The camera only gives us a clue as to who this guy might be, and these policemen that are diligent and really aware of what's going on in their districts, they say, hey, I know who that guy is. Let's go get him.
And then the cooperation, you've talked about this before, is needed. We understand why sometimes people don't cooperate out of fear, retaliation for themselves and their families. But you've also seen some recent cases where people are not cooperating for reasons that seem a little more baffling than that. They couldn't be traced back to them. They're not even at their house when it happened, and they just simply aren't cooperating.
Right. I don't know. It's, you know, if snitches get stitches, mentality that certain NBA stars also contributed to in rap songs. But the bottom line is, if you're the victim and you see these poor people on television all the time saying, I want to know who shot my 7-year-old. I want to know who shot my 1-year-old. They're pleading for help. If the whole community would band together, you don't have to go and walk into the police station brazenly and say, I know who did this. There's always a way. There's numbers you can call. There's names you can contact and keep yourself anonymous and get this information. Just give us an idea. Just give us where. Just give us an idea of the gang. Just give us a nickname.
Right.
And the police can start working from there.
Yeah, you hope that there can be some sort of trust rebuilt in communities that have lost trust, and it goes both ways. We talk about this all the time.
Well, with the adding of the policemen, there's more availability for the policemen to actually talk to people. They're not running from job to job to job to job.
So they get to know folks a little more.
Right.
They get invested in themselves
and
their lives, hopefully. You do, yeah. And that is the new initiative, although the crime numbers from February are not promising or good to hear about, and you hope that that's just, that reverses.
Yeah, February is not a month known for that many shootings. Maybe it's the mild weather, but, it's getting sad.
Mm-hmm. Sergeant Pete, thank you for coming by. We always like hearing from you on these types of issues, and thank you for the background on that story that is in the news today about Sergeant Watts. Good to see you.
Good seeing you.
We're back with more here on WGN. We'll be, it's 1:44. Stay with us. 1:46 here on WGN. This is Anna DeVlantis, and we have a special guest here with us because here's the deal. If you're thinking about doing any kind of work on your home, and I am, I'm thinking about doing work on the home, you think about it in the terms of it's one of your greatest investments, if not the biggest investment. And so what do you do? How much money do you put in and where do you put it? These are always choices. Now, if you have unlimited budgets, you put it wherever you want, whatever. If you feel like you're trying to increase the value of your home, whether you're selling now or plan to sell later, that's what we're trying to talk about here with Melanie Giglio-Vacos. She is 20 years a realtor in the real estate business here in Chicago. And top 1% of local realtors for over a decade. You know your stuff. You deal with sellers all the time, Melanie. And you have to tell them where to put their hard-earned money and how to increase value. And it's important, right? It's an important thing to think about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Compass is your firm, I should say.
Yes, Compass Real Estate.
Compass, yep. Real Estate. And so you deal with sellers a lot, and they're saying, okay, I want to put some money into my house. I'm thinking about selling down the road, or I'm thinking about selling right now. Is it still true that the bathroom and the kitchen are the places to put the real money?
Absolutely. That's really where people go to look at to decide if the home is dated or if it's new, and you're in competition with so much new construction these days. And so if you don't put the investment into those areas that I think that you could, be in the bottom of the competition and make it a little bit more difficult to sell.
Do you have to have the ultra, whatever the hot thing is? Because I don't even know what the hot thing is anymore. About
it changes.
In a house. It changes. It does. Yeah. It seems to change in real estate more frequently than I would think. But you go to a place that someone just buys and it's a newer place, you're like, oh, they're doing that now. What are they doing in kitchens now? What's the thing?
Great question. And what I could tell you today may not be what it is next year, so don't hold it against me. But we always are looking at the trends, and it's always important to try and keep things as timeless as possible, right? So you're not looking at it and saying, oh, that's so 2007 or whatever the case may be. The whites, the lighter colors, are always something really good to stick with.
In a kitchen, you want to do the light, bright stuff?
Yeah, more than likely, the white cabinets, the quartz or the quartzite countertops are always, in trend. But now we're seeing a little bit of a mix where they're adding brass. The brushed brass into the hardware and the lighting fixtures and tying that in. And we're also seeing some really cool colors like the emerald green and the dark blues, mixing in with that. That's been really popular these days as well. The only thing about that, which I truly love, is that you could look at it a couple years from now and it might scream, hey, it's so 2020, 2020. And so that's where we, run into it. But I think that, you're safe with, if you're trying to sell something today, staying in trend is really important.
It's interesting. I love color in a home. I do. I painted one room, little small room, that's bright orange. And I'm sure that would be horrible for resale. But sometimes you just want personal. I mean, is color okay if you are thinking down the road or even nearer than that about resale?
Yeah. And you know what? I think color is very important. I also have a staging company. And so I focus on, putting those pops of color in all over the place to be able to, brighten up a home and make it look, trendy. But it's good to have the standard finishes, and they're not so trendy, and maybe add those colors in your accessories and your artwork and so forth. So, you could have those colors and bring some life to the room, but not necessarily making it so personal that the next person might not like it. You could add those beautiful oranges in that the pillows and the rug or the artwork, and still have those, appreciate those vibrant colors. And
don't paint the whole room that way. Unless you let me, for now, I feel like I can cover with a coat of paint. We're not planning on selling anytime soon. I feel like it's a burst of sunshine, especially on winter days. I just love that room.
It's my favorite color.
To go sit and read, it's orangey, yellow. It's just bright. But, they always say neutrals are a good key. But then you throw in your pop of color, like you said, where you want it.
Yeah. It's really good to, to accessorize and whatnot, but you really want to kind of stay as neutral as possible to appeal to the masses.
Okay. Clutter is another issue, especially if you're selling a home. People don't want to see other people's junk. And it isn't just your sweaty gym clothes that you don't want to see, because that obviously has to be put away.
Right.
And the smell is a real issue. I remember when I was touring houses, if it smelled, it was like, oh, I can't see past that. It was just hard.
Most people can't.
Isn't that true?
Absolutely.
What's the number one turnoff of when you walk in a house?
Well, first off, cigarette smoke is a definite no, of course, as well as pet, gander. It's just, when someone smells dog or cat or something like that, they're immediately turned off, no matter how beautiful a place is. So that's one of the first things that I go to when I'm, going into someone's home. And I don't sugarcoat it. I let them know, listen, this has an odor to it, and the owners might not know about it because they live in it.
Right, but your dog, you don't smell your dog.
No, absolutely. So I make sure that has to get changed right away. And a lot of times it's just about shampooing, carpeting, new coat of paint, and just some deep, deep cleaning that we'll be able to, take care of that. I just listed a home just this past week where we walked in and it smelled moldy.
Mm.
And so we got all the carpets cleaned, we painted, we put all this, air freshener in, and now it's gone.
630, what do you think of gray cabinets? Is it too trendy? I would have the same question, because I start seeing that now in the newer properties that are coming up in the area whenever I see them online. They're gray. The kitchens are gray cabinets.
Gray is a very popular color. And as a matter of fact, with this one property that we just listed, we painted the cabinets, and we did the bottom cabinets a charcoal gray, and then did the uppers a white, and then added that brass hardware. And it is just absolutely stunning.
Yeah. 815, I'm so tired of the white kitchen look. It looks too sterile, like a hospital. You've said before that it's really cool to just, if you want to kind of freshen up your kitchen and you don't want to spend that much money, you can paint the cabinets, maybe this light gray or whatever you just described, and put new hardware on. And it totally changes the whole look.
I could show the before and after pictures of some of the things that we've done, and it's unbelievable. We walked into a kitchen that was cherry everything. It was screaming cherry all over, from the cabinets to the floors. And
it's 2010.
It's terrible.
I like cherry on that.
I know.
But this is, you're right, there's different trends.
No one wants to see it now. And so we painted those cabinets with the charcoal gray and the white top, and also painted the hardware. And we didn't even have to buy hardware. We just painted it that brass. And I'll tell you, everyone that has walked in there is in love with the kitchen. So, there's a way of not making it so boring and just all white. I know a lot of times they do the quartz countertops that are all white, but if you were to add some of those beautiful stones and the veins that are in there, it really, livens it up a bit, as well as accessorizing with color.
Okay, so you talked about that. We talked about major makeovers. If you're going to put money in, it is still the bathroom and the kitchen.
100%.
Minor makeover, let's say you don't have a ton of money to spend, where would you, what would you do?
Honestly, the number one things are painting. You have to get things more neutral. But also a fresh coat of paint will just make a room feel new and fresh and lively. So even if you were to, and I don't recommend white on the walls. I recommend just a light color, like a light gray or warm gray. The gray doesn't have to be cold. Gray could be a nice warm, you know, a warm gray to where it will, you know, just warm up a room, but also make it feel fresh and new.
Okay, what about very few bucks? You want a lot of bang for practically nothing.
Okay, so it is the painting. It is new carpeting.
New carpeting.
You know, if you have carpeting in the bedrooms, let's say, or old carpeting in the bedrooms, get rid of it. Put in the cheap new carpeting is better than old worn out carpeting. Mm-hmm. So that's always the two highest recommendations that are the cheapest and most inexpensive cost. But then when you're getting into the kitchens, honestly, being able to refinish a kitchen with painting the cabinets. We had a nice size kitchen that we painted cabinets for $1,500. And now they look like they're brand new cabinets. The hardware cost $100. We painted all of that. The countertops, get new quartz. Got to get rid of the granite.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the granite
Granite's not in anymore.
Granite is not it. No.
What is it on the countertops?
It's the quartz on and the quartzite is really nice.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure I could tell the difference. Could I? The granite and the quartzite?
Yes, I promise you can. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. And then don't get so trendy with the backsplashes. It's so nice when you could just carry the countertop onto the backsplash as well and just keep it very, you know, seam-lined, and it will, you know, make a big impact.
Big impact. That's what we want to hear. Melanie Giglio-Vacos, she's with Compass Real Estate, and we appreciate these tips. How can people find you, Melanie? I know you do write a lot on these subjects. One of the things I've looked in, all of the things you've written, really helpful stuff. Where do they find you?
Thank you. Yeah, I did just write in a magazine, the FET magazine. It's a wonderful magazine that, you know, just talks about, you know,
mostly
lifestyles
home.
And stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you could reach me via email, melanie.giglio@compass.com, or I actually answer my cell phone.
Oh.
Yes, 312-953-4998.
And you just give it out, okay.
I give it
out. Good for you, Melanie.
Yes,
well,
yes.
She's not top 1% of local realtors for over a decade for nothing. She's very accessible. So read her stuff, and thank you for the tips. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good to see you. Coming up here on the show, it is 1:57 exactly here on WGN. And we've got much more ahead here on the show coming up here in the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. That's what I needed to say. Thanks. Yeah, the music kind of makes you want to dance a little bit. We're dancing in the studio here just hearing that. 208, it's Anna DeVlantis, and we want to talk technology and what's happening because there are some great stories in Chicago and this area to talk about. And here to talk about it is the CEO of 1871, Betsy Ziegler. See, 1871 is the central tech address in Chicago, the place to go if you're starting a tech business. Tons of entrepreneurs there. A lot of success stories, Betsy.
Indeed.
I mean, it feels like you see these companies like Cameo or others that are making headlines in all the business pages now that started there when they were just one or two guys or girls or whatever hanging out.
Exactly. Just had an idea.
Yep. And a problem they wanted to fix or something they wanted to do. Talk about what you all are doing over there, how things
are
going.
Sure. Well, first of all, it's a pleasure to be on the show. So thank you. Thank you for including me. So 1871 is home to about 450 founders right now. So we have about 450 different people who are, to your point earlier, exploring an idea or solving a problem that they think is really important to them. You know, that's a lot of energy, a lot of activity. And for anyone out there who's not been to 1871, you know, come by. We give tours. Just slide through. Kind of get a feeling for it. We're just in the merchandise mart.
There's an energy to it because
total
you're right.
Energy.
You have all these people with dreams and business ideas,
yeah,
and they're working hard. And I think they also gain a lot from interacting with each other.
Totally.
Sharing intel, sharing information, you know, that kind of thing. There's a huge benefit to what you've set up over there.
Yeah. So I think a couple things to that point. I mean, my job and my team's job is to help increase the probability of success for all of those people that walk in the door and then shorten the time frame for them to reach it.
Mm-hmm.
But the magic, the thing that's really special about 1871 is the diversity and density of the people in the space. Because we've got founders, we've got folks from seven different local universities, we've got people that invest, we've got corporate partners that come over and spend time, we've got hundreds of mentors, right? So this all these people in the space create these opportunities for these spontaneous collisions where people can help each other.
I so just want to like, stand there.
Constant thing
I
of helping
get,
each other.
I think if I just stand there, I'll get smarter. You in know, the middle, people, just be there and all the energy.
But that's why you know, a lot of people come in like, can we just spend some time here? Because it's so much more fun and more interesting than the some of the other places that some people work. Right?
Yes, you know, of course.
So it's you're exhausted by the end of the day, I will say, but it's good. It's a happy exhaustion.
Yeah, you go home sort of feeling like you've heard a lot of ideas and a lot of people talking with big, exciting things going on.
Yeah.
Hiring in Chicago area and our general area, we like to learn about hiring and the way, you know, tech jobs are growing and businesses are growing here because it contributes to our economy and it is a big piece of the future, let's face it. How are we doing?
I think we're doing quite well. I give some historical perspective. If you rolled the clock back about 8 years ago, tech was 2% of Chicago's economy. Now we're in the 10.5%, 11% range. And so we've grown a lot in a pretty short period of time. If you think about the big tech companies that most people recognize, and we can debate later, is everything a tech company or not?
Right.
You know, we can talk about that.
Everybody tries to be.
Exactly.
It's cool.
But if you think about Facebook and Google and name any of the ones that you that sort of the Salesforce, any of the popular ones, they're all here.
Mm-hmm. They all have a presence here.
They all have a presence here, and they're all growing. They're all growing. And that what's important about that is I think a lot of them moved here initially for sales and marketing jobs, which is great, but they're now also hiring a lot of tech talent in Chicago. So there's at least one company that told me recently, it's called Stripe. It's a credit card payment company. They told me that Chicago is their East Coast headquarters, which is sort of an interesting thing. Like, oh, okay, that's interesting. But they're all, I mean, there are homegrown companies here that are growing. Clear Cover is an insurance company adding 100 jobs. And then you've got an Affirm who's moving from the West Coast, opening an office here and having 100 jobs. And
that's the PayPal co-founder
exactly,
who started
Max,
Affirm.
Yeah.
And he says he's looking for talent in cities that are less expensive and less competitive in terms of chasing the same talent than the Silicon Valleys of the world. I guess that makes us appealing.
For sure. I mean, on two fronts, both our cost of living, but also on the talent front. I mean, it might surprise you or your listeners to know that we are the second highest producer of software developers in the country annually.
Mm.
Like, that's, people don't know that.
We're
second only to LA, which is, it's just, that's an important thing for us to remember. And so when we talk about people who are hiring and people looking for jobs, we have a lot of people, a lot of talent, and we have a lot of companies hiring, and we have an opportunity, I think, as a city to do a better job matching those, but we have the ingredients for both of them, right, to have to really have a massive impact.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And 1871 itself has had a massive impact because you think about the jobs created that began there in that place in the merchandise mart where you've got all these bright people and these entrepreneurs created a ton of jobs.
Yeah, so we have about, as I mentioned earlier, 450 companies that are currently there. We have another 650 alumni companies that are still alive and operating off of a base of about 1,200 or so. And those 650 companies in the last 7 years have created almost 11,500 jobs, which is, you know, I think a pretty big number.
Yeah, it's a huge number.
You know, I take a guess on an average annual salary. If you just take a guess that it's 70,000, could be wrong, could be a little high, could be a little bit low. That's about $800 million of salaries
infusion
going into
the economy.
Chicago to drive economic activity.
And the future, I want to ask you about the future here, because we lost the Amazon HQ2, and that felt like a failure for a minute, but now I'm hearing tech leaders, and I want to get your take in a moment here. Was it really a failure? Is it better off that we didn't get it? Betsy Ziegler is our guest. She's the CEO of 1871, the tech hub, the central address here in Chicago if you're building a tech company. And she's got some thoughts coming up here on WGN. All right, back with Betsy Ziegler, the CEO of 1871. I remember when we lost HQ2 for Amazon, and it just felt like, oh, they put so much in it. We really thought we had a chance, and people were just, the wind was out of our sails. And now, since then, I've read some things and talked to some tech leaders, and they're saying, you know what, it might not be that bad after all. Amazon is still investing, still creating jobs here. And you didn't have to give up all those tax kind of incentives in order to get them here, which were pretty big, right? Over, what do you think, Betsy?
Yeah, I think I would fall into a similar camp. I mean, I was certainly part of the group that was really excited about the potential of them being here. Mm-hmm. And when we found out we weren't getting it, there was a bit of a letdown, but I think then classic Chicagoans, right, we just pick ourselves up and keep moving forward. And like I mentioned a few minutes ago, every other major tech company is here in Chicago, and they're expanding and building jobs and creating opportunities for lots of Chicagoans. So and we didn't have to give up anything for any of that, as you just said.
So what kinds of jobs are there? I mean, I think people might be wondering, hey, what kinds of skills are needed, and where do you see the growth?
So I think I have a two-part answer. I think the expected answer that people want to hear or expect to hear is that anything that's technical, data, analytics, software developer, user interface, user experience, those design, digital design, any of those types of skills are really important. The good news about all of those is you can get them anywhere. I mean, you don't have to go back to get a degree to get those. And the companies that are hiring that technical talent aren't requiring, aren't requiring a degree to do that. So if you're in one job, you've been trained for one job, you can add these other skills through a variety of different ways, which we can talk about if you want. I think the other thing that's really important to remember is the future of our work is changing really fast. It's going to require a whole different orientation of how you think about your work because robots and artificial intelligence and some of this will take over some of it. And so what I want people to remember is that there's always going to be a competitive advantage to being a human, right? It's easy to forget that sometimes, right? So things like how you learn how to communicate with other people, how you learn how to influence, how you learn how to work with a team, how you think about having the robot be a team member versus a competitor. I mean, those things
are
also
weird at first. I'm not going to lie.
Important. No, it's going to be super weird, I think it's really important. And those skills, computers will never be able to take over. And so I think there's also a need to invest in that type of training as well.
Yeah. So that's what you're seeing. And I feel like, is it the kind of thing where people can do mid-career? Can they 100%. Train themselves to do these kinds of, or go to some of these classes? As you said, you don't need to go back and get a 4-year degree in order to do this. That's super expensive. This is less so.
Yep.
Those skills are things that you can pick up?
Yes, you can. I think that some people are going to have a natural aptitude and interest in it, right? You know, my attention span now is not the same as it perhaps was, but there's no age limit on any of these things. You can do it, and there's truly hundreds of places around the city of Chicago that can help train you.
It sounds like you're painting a pretty positive picture about where we are as a city in terms of tech jobs and where we're going. Mm-hmm. What do you think is the next kind of frontier for us? What do we need to do in Chicago in order to be taken seriously?
Yeah. Well, I think we are taken seriously. I think that there's probably two or three areas that we need to improve on. But before I answer that, I just want to make sure the audience also recognizes that Chicago is number one in a lot of metrics with respect to tech. The most important one, in my opinion, is with female founders. So 36% of the founders at 1871 are female, 34% in the city of Chicago, and the national average is about 18. So we're doing basically double the national average, but that leads me to an opportunity. I think we still, the vast majority of the tech activity is centralized in this downtown Loop River North Fulton Market area, and we've got 77 neighborhoods that we need to engage differently. So there's an inequity that's a really big opportunity for the city of Chicago. So that's number one. And number two is on, while we're the third biggest city in the country in terms of population, we're ranked about seventh in total venture capital. So we don't have the same amount of money coming in to invest in Chicago companies as I think we could benefit by. We're doing well, very early stage, but as they start to grow, we need more of that money coming from Chicago.
Why is that a problem, do you think? You see things like some huge success stories like Groupon founded here, and we've mentioned Cameo. I mean, there's so many. The Clover Safe, is that I'm saying?
Clover
that?
Safe.
Clever Safe. Yep. I mean, there are big success companies. Stories.
Yep. Right.
Why wouldn't that money start flowing?
Well, it's getting better. It's just that the number of funds we have in Chicago, the size of those funds don't mirror the coast. So don't mirror Seattle, San Francisco, New York, Boston. And I think that there's an opportunity for more growth capital. In my opinion, the money is actually here in Chicago. It's just not being invested in those kinds of companies yet.
Well, we hope that changes for sure. It was an interesting story about, it was called Techlash in the Wall Street Journal. And they were talking about how young, like millennials who have choices and are trained in these kinds of skills that you talked about, how they really want to align their values with a company. And they don't necessarily do that with big tech right now. They're looking at some of these companies for all the reasons we're looking at Facebook and data breaches and other things like that, and not necessarily telling the truth to all their users about exactly what they're doing. And they're saying, I'm going to take my talents elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Is that a real, are you feeling that with the interactions you've had with people at 1871 and elsewhere?
Sure. I mean, most of my team members would fall into that sort of age range that you're talking about. And I would argue that they are way more values-driven, way more purpose-driven than I was at the equivalent age. I'm not going to tell you how many years ago, but a lot. That it's a totally different part of the conversation that I don't remember even having any sort of awareness of. So it's absolutely there. I think that people at 1871 care about the problems that they're solving, and they're trying to create, they're very small teams, you know, sort of on average 1 to 3 people, but they're trying to build people and advisors around them that are passionate about that particular problem. You know, Steve Galanis, who was just on, you know,
from Cameo.
You know, from Cameo, he started with 1 or 2 people at 1871, and they got really excited about this idea that other people would be like, is that an important problem to solve or not? But he's made it one, and what they've created and the trajectory they're on is phenomenal.
It really is. Know? So for people not familiar, it's celebrities basically will send a personalized message to a friend or a loved one or whoever you want, and then you pay them whatever their rate is from $50 up to $500
exactly.
or higher.
But the big vision is that he could disrupt the whole talent agency market by this, by sort of, you know, then you have live experiences where these famous people show up at your
events or that kind of thing.
Or whatever, you know, I mean, those kinds of things, like the potential for it to get way bigger than what it currently is, which is sort of the selfie, personalized selfie, is remarkable.
Sky's the limit on that. So what is the future here? What do you get excited about when you look at the future? I always like to ask that question of people like you who are interacting with so many bright minds and like your own, but people who are making a difference in that tech space. What should we look forward to, or what do you personally look forward to?
So I think for a lot of people, and myself included, you think about the world right now, you think complexity has never been higher, level of ambiguity or the pace of change has never been higher. But I personally believe that, yes, those things are true, but because of where technology is and because of the potential in pairing technology with people, that no problem can't be solved right now. And that, for me, is what gives me the most hope and energy. I personally, I'm really most excited about the rise of autonomous transport and sort of over the next, it's sort of a question of when, not if, that we'll have self-driving cars.
So you're okay with that, just sit in the back seat and having the computer take control?
I'm not sure I'm going to be
front seat, wherever you decide.
I'm not going to be the first person to try it, but I definitely am excited by it. I think it will transform a lot of kind of how we live. I'm also quite energized by the rise in the computing power and artificial intelligence and how that will help us make decisions better, particularly in things related to health, medicine, education, basic science.
We have Betsy, we have several people asking if you're older and you're not a millennial, are you still allowed to go to 1871?
Yeah,
do you have older teams, people over 28
I neglected to. So I am not 28. People can see me on the live stream, but I'm not 28. The average age is actually like 35, 36. So we have a pretty big range. A lot of the people that are in the space had a corporate career or some kind of other career before they decided to be an entrepreneur. So it's not 400 20-year-olds running around. And we've got some 20-year-olds, but it's a nice balance all the way through. So yes. Everyone's welcome.
Are there any training programs that you would say that you know of upfront that would be good for people to check out in terms of learning tech skills?
Yeah.
Any advice on that?
Sure. I'll give you a couple, and then people can send me an email at betsy@1871.com if they want to ask more specific questions. But General Assembly has coding camp. Code Nation is a coding camp. There's a company at 1871 called Promotable that is helping people think through the data analytics skill set. So if you just Google, you know, coding camp or data analytics skills in Chicago, the list will come up, and there's lots of choices about you know, the length of those and the cost of those. And mm-hmm. so
there's a lot out there, it sounds
like, that you can find.
All right. So it's Betsy Ziegler. She is the CEO of 1871. You can reach her, Betsy, at 1871.com, just 1871.com. And, you know, she can, if you have any questions about that, she can help you out. I so appreciate you coming by and talking about all this, Betsy.
Thanks for having me.
Giving us an idea. And I have a very positive picture of what's going on. And
you should. I'm glad.
Good. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thanks, Betsy. Good to see you.
Thank you.
2:29 is the time. It's coming up on News Time, and that is coming up from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We're back here on WGN 232. Anna DeVlantis, along with Tom Gimbel. He's the guy who knows everything about jobs, keeps track of all that stuff so that we don't have to, and then delivers that information to you in a very candid way. I mean, this is the thing about you, Tom. You don't... Are you like this with your family?
Get right to it. What you see, my kids would say that is very much the case.
I can totally tell. And on the subject of jobs, I remember you said last time, you just sort of corrected me when I said, well, if you feel like you deserve a job, you don't. There's a lot of competition out there, and you got to have the skills, you got to have everything, and go after it the best you can, right?
One of my earliest clients said, who was very high up in a publicly traded organization, and he said to me, every day I come to work thinking there's a 30% chance I'm going to lose my job. And he didn't have to worry about it, right? And I think that's the mentality of... that this economy doesn't really project, but you should come with a sense of, I've got to earn it.
Yeah, well, that's how you get promoted. That's how you get recognized within an organization as well. But if people look at the unemployment rate right now. What is it? 3.5%. Mm-hmm. I know when the candidates were in Iowa, it's 2.7%.
Correct.
Crazy low. It feels as if there is a job for you out there if you want it. How do you look at it as an opportunity, or what do you see when you see the unemployment this low as a person who's out there either looking to move jobs or looking to get into the workforce?
Well, the real challenge that exists, and it's not a popular take for politicians to ever say, but that is, if you want a job, there's one out there, but you've got to be willing to, A, take the jobs that your skill set matches with. You're going to have to earn your keep. You got to show up on time. I mean, there's a lot of people that'll beg for a job and they get it and then they don't show up on time. They come in late. Everybody doesn't have the same work ethic, and there is a sense of entitlement. The only difference between me and a lot of other people is they want to blame it on millennials and Gen Z, and I think the poor work ethic is across generations.
You see it everywhere. Every single one. I mean, you're right. We all like to blame each other, but you're absolutely right. It exists everywhere. We just had Betsy Ziegler in here, and I know you know each other.
Yep.
She's a powerful person in the tech world here in Chicago, and she painted a pretty nice picture about the way things are going in terms of technology companies hiring here, in terms of companies that in Silicon Valley who are starting to see their workforce challenged by skyrocketing rents and skyrocketing kind of like the labor. Everyone's competing for the same people.
Correct.
And so they're starting to look at places like Chicago to expand.
Huge.
And we're seeing that.
We are seeing that. And there'll be ripple effects in a good way and a bad way, right? They come and take on 100,000 square feet of office space. It's going to raise rent for the average Joe company that's trying to been in Chicago for decades and is trying to make a go of it. It'll increase salaries here as they'll pay more, which will still be less than what they're paying in California, in Silicon Valley. So there are positives and negatives. On the flip side, you've got to look and say, and the biggest challenge, I think we touched on this a little bit the other week, was tech jobs aren't just coders and developers and engineers. There's salespeople for technology companies. There's receptionists. There's accountants. There's marketing people. You don't have to be a technologist to work for a technology company.
So when they expand, it's good for everybody because you're hiring all sorts of folks.
Absolutely. And on the flip side, there are technology people, professionals, that can work for non-technology companies. You wouldn't think WGN is a technology company. However, there are developers that are doing the mm-hmm. website. There are engineers. There are infrastructure people building it out, computers. So there's a whole bunch of a myriad of different positions people don't talk about.
That's so true. Tom Gimbel is the founder founder and CEO of LaSalle Network. He's our guest. If you have questions for Tom about the job market, he can answer them, and he will just be careful because he's going to be very direct with you, and he won't mince words, and it's okay. You're going to like it because it'll be an honest and a very well thought out piece of advice, I find, with you. You're very good at sort of nailing what the issues are. And one of the issues that just came up, too, is where are the jobs? Where are the jobs? If you look at the Chicago sort of metro area right now, where are you seeing job growth?
So there's always going to be jobs for the foreseeable future, right? In technology, it's always going to be. As the economy's good, sales jobs are always going to be in demand. Now, we're not talking about retail sales jobs. All those exist as well, but I'm talking more B2B. So if you're graduating from college and you have a liberal arts degree or a personality where you want to have an unlimited cap on earnings, going into a sales training program with a growing company is really a great avenue. Marketing still tends to be, but it's becoming more analytical based. And that's when people talk about data scientists and big data, they're talking about being an analytical mind. You can't take somebody who doesn't have an analytical mind and turn them into a data scientist or an engineer, mm-hmm. right? That's a recipe for disaster. You've got to know what your strengths are, and you've got to be willing to do jobs. And you just can't have, when I was a kid, it was called keeping up with the Joneses, right? Because your best friend is an engineer and they're making $100,000 a year or two out of college doesn't mean you should be if you're not an engineer, right? You've got, some of us still have to start at the bottom and earn our way up. And you do that through hard work, through a good attitude, through learning, and quite frankly, outworking the person in the cube next to you.
We have a 708 saying, well, where are the jobs for people over 60? Do you find that there's an ageism kind of thing for people trying to get jobs and move around after a certain age?
I don't think there's as much ageism as I believe there is a payism. And what I mean by that is, if the job requires not as much, it doesn't require a high level of skill, and you can pay somebody cheaper, you would do that. So whenever I say to somebody who's crying on ageism for that type of job, now it does exist in certain ways, I'm not saying it doesn't, but if you were going to hire somebody to babysit your kid, and an 18-year-old charged you $10 an hour, and a 60-year-old charged you $30 an hour, you'd say the 18-year-old's just fine.
Given all everything's being equal, right? You might look for other things, like, are they driving? Are they responsible?
Correct. And if all those things were the same, you would take the one that's less expensive, correct?
I think so. That example with the childcare, I just feel, it becomes very deeply personal.
Let's call it a 25-year-old versus a 60-year-old.
I get your point. I get the point. Totally get it.
And so I think that those are the thing. How about to paint your house or to cut your lawn?
Okay. Right? Yes.
So when you have skills that aren't in high to acquire skills, then you're going to have something where people are going to pay the least amount. Now, where can somebody over 60 go? You can go into a call center. Tomorrow, there are a ton of call centers in a 40-mile radius of the Chicagoland area that somebody who has experience dealing with customer service, dealing with patients, dealing with those types of things. You can get a job in healthcare, in a billing department. There are things you can do. Now, the question is, do you want to do those jobs? Do you want to be stuck to that kind of schedule? Mm-hmm. And those are the challenges that exist.
Can you work from home in any of those call centers? Do they allow that?
Easier said than done.
Okay.
And if you don't have a breadth of experience, probably not.
Okay. What about the dirty word automation that just came up with Betsy moments ago? And people are wondering, you know, how that's going to impact us as we look toward the future. What's your take on that, Tom?
I think that when you're a consumer, you love automation. When it's phasing you out of a job, you're probably not so hot for it. And so my belief is that, yes, certain things are going to be automated, but it's going to take a long time for that to happen. And what you need to be focused, it really depends on, if you're 60 years old, do you care about automation?
Probably not.
A job? Probably not. If you're 23 years old and you're graduating from college, should you be taking courses and learning and becoming well-versed and becoming jack of all trades, perhaps master of none? Yeah, that probably makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're not that fearful about it. It's just going to reassemble. Are the number of jobs going to stay about the same? Or
I think we're talking over, you know, don't forget this. If the autonomous vehicles are going to be the wave of the future, then how come all the Silicon Valley companies have built huge campuses with huge parking lots? Mm-hmm. Everything is going to take time for it to evolve. And what you have to do is realize that there wasn't a mass elimination of blacksmiths back in the day, right? They acquire new skills and you move on.
They figured it out
somehow.
Yes,
you figure it out. The key is this. Are you malleable? Or do you have a good attitude? Are you willing to take on new tasks? If you're the stubborn person who leaves every day at 4:59 to catch their train, never wants to be part of the group and never takes on new projects, guess what? I'd be a little nervous.
If I'm applying for a job, this is 912, that I have been encouraged to apply for by managers, is the competition that stiff, or could there be an issue I don't see with my resume? This is for an internal posting. I think they're asking about if you post, is there something wrong with your resume? I do hear, speaking of automation, I do hear about a lot of times through HR now, they're looking for keyword searches. There is sort of an automated way of going through filtering and vetting out resumes.
There absolutely is. Now, the difference is if unemployment were at 6.5%, I'd be more concerned about that than at 3.5%, because now there really is a shortage. The key thing with a resume is, and I ask this of people all the time when that question comes to me, is how many people do you have look at it? How many times did you have somebody edit it? If you were writing something for publication, it would go to an editor, assuming it's not just a blog post and all that kind of stuff, right? But old school days, because you know I'm an old school guy, is it would go to an editor and they would red pen it and they'd send it back to you. A resume is the biggest publication you will ever do. And the fact that you don't have anybody else edit it, for grammar, for typos, for layout. You've got to practice
this. Or keywords.
Oh, you're selling yourself. Mm-hmm. This is the one shot you have, and you're going to go at it willy-nilly?
Hey, not a good idea, Tom says. We're out of time, but I do want to make sure. I think I bungled this question. The 912 is actually asking, it's an internal hiring situation. Should I assume in this economy that there's a lot of outside competition, or if
most
they've
definitely
asked, even if your managers have asked you to apply for that position,
don't take anything for granted. Assume there is always competition. Nothing is exclusive, and it's very similar to being married. Always treat your spouse special, treat your job special, and do everything you can to make a good impression.
That's great advice. Like, that's just excellent stuff, Tom. Tom Gimbel, founder of and CEO of LaSalle Network. Thank you, Tom.
Good to be here.
It's 2:43 and we've got trending topics coming up. Get this. Have you heard of the broomstick challenge? It's been trending on social media. They said it came from NASA, challenging people to do this. It did not come from NASA. It's all a hoax. Why people are still doing it and what's going on there. Also, bad news for Cubs fans if you want to catch a game in Milwaukee when they play the Brewers, because they're trying to keep Illinois people out of the tickets sales. They're trying to stop you from buying tickets. All coming up, trending topics next. 2:46, time for trending topics. Lauren Lapka is in the studio. Steve Bertrand is in the studio. Have you guys heard of the broomstick challenge?
Heard of it. I can't get rid of it on social media. Oh my goodness.
It's like everybody's standing their broomstick up to show that it can stand by itself, because supposedly NASA said that there was something about the Earth's axis and this gravitational pull, and it was all a total hoax, that your broomstick actually does just stand up by itself.
So it's a hoax that there's some sort of supernatural sort of thing behind it, but people are doing it anyway?
Everyone's doing it. Like, if you get on social media and you'll just see celebrities are now doing
Brooms
it.
Everywhere.
You've got Al Roker on the Today Show. He's doing it. And apparently the broom does stand up. Have you tried this, Steve?
No.
It's just the bristles, you put it on the bristles, and because of the way they're designed, they just kind of pop out enough.
Right, sure.
To support it like a tripod.
Right. So someone figured out something that everything already does. And then gave it a magical answer.
The weird part was that it kind of started trending because they said that NASA told people that this was the day, I think it was yesterday, where the Earth's axis was such that there was this gravitational pull.
Because of the ice moon.
Sure.
The ice moon.
Whatever it was, the idea was you can only do it right now because of whatever weird reason, but the reality is you could do it any day of the year, anytime you want.
Turns out your broom doesn't care about the axes or what NASA puts out. It just sort of works all the time. And so people are proving that it works out all the time.
So is that a good thing or a bad thing? Because I'm going to argue that it's both, because I think a lot of us are pretty dim-witted sometimes and fall for anything.
That's very true.
And believe anything. I think that's clear. But it's also kind of fun when everyone gets together and does something
As long as it's not hurting anybody, it's funny to see what kind of things can go viral.
It's kind of unifying in a weird way. Like, remember all those challenges before? There was the cinnamon challenge. There was the ice bucket challenge.
The ice bucket. The cinnamon one was, well, of course, that was a bad one. People were
that was
hurt.
Not good.
No.
That part was not good. But a NASA scientist actually agrees with you, Steve, so you're in good company. He says that, you know what, if it makes people think about science, especially kids, and do experiments and learn these kinds of things, it's all good.
You guys are interested, just take a physics course. It's all all good.
Mm-hmm. They'll right. learn a lot.
People explode. Who are going to be fooled into standing their broom on end are going to sign up for a physics course.
Maybe it's a little stretch. It's a little bit of a stretch there. But, you know, the broomstick challenge, you can check it out. Just go online and you'll see people standing their brooms on the end. Okay, how about this? So Cubs fans who want to buy tickets to see the Brewers, because apparently this is a thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right? Uh-huh. You go up to Wisconsin, hey, yeah, there, and you you buy your tickets. Well, they say that now there's no longer Wrigley North. They're trying to shut down the number of Cubs fans who buy tickets. So starting Tuesday and running till Thursday, they're going to have a special Wisconsin-only purchase. It's called Wisconsin Resident-Only Presale. For tickets against the Cubs at Miller Park.
Well, I mean, I kind of understand that. I've never been up there. I cannot believe. I lived in Milwaukee. I go up there for sporting, you know, Marquette mm-hmm. games. I've never been. And it's not Miller Park anymore either, is it?
Oh, what is it?
I think they've changed names.
Did they?
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Huh. I think it's not till next year.
That they're changing names?
Yeah, it was. Oh, okay. I forget what it's going to be called. American Families, maybe?
Hmm. Kim Gordon knows these things. Kim follows the Packers and the Brewers, it turns out.
Kim is as close to cheese as we have.
I'm just a wealth of Wisconsin information.
What's the best cheese in Wisconsin, Kim?
Oh, nothing like a good brick cheese.
Cheese Castle. Here I come. But anyway, that's what they're doing. I guess you don't blame them? I don't know. I guess they had so many games where they had more Cubs fans than Brewers.
It's a great little weekend trip if you want to go up there. And, you know, they have a really fun bar scene
yes.
with all the breweries over there. So I do know a lot of people that go up there. But at the same time, money is money. So don't you just want the money? They're paying to go see it, and then they're going to spend even more money in your park.
It's yeah. probably a marketing thing anyway, though. They're not going to sell out to Brewers fans, and now they'll create a little, you know,
tension.
Early buzz,
yeah.
sell early games to the Brewers fans,
that's
and
true.
Then we'll still outnumber them.
It's like a rallying cry. You're probably right.
When I was when I went to school there, they were in the American League, uh-huh. and the Brewers fans were very intimidated by the White Sox fans.
Who isn't?
Yeah. Said, spoken like a true Sox fan. So the Milwaukee Brewers actual press and that they put out on Twitter, defend your turf.
See, yeah.
Yeah.
They're selling tickets.
Yeah, that see is what's a going good on there. Mm-hmm. We see what's going on there. You can purchase only up to four tickets for opening day and up to eight for the regular season games against the Cubs this season. So that's what they're doing. Jonathan Toews, we know him, Blackhawks captain. He is getting a career milestone, 800, right? Did he just...
800 points, correct?
800
yeah.
points, that's it. We just saw Patrick Kane cross 1,000 points.
Mm-hmm.
So it's...
Our two young stars, remember, it was like just yesterday they were 18.
I know. And look at him now. Uber is launching a service you can take your pet. You can bring your pet, a small animal companion, on your ride. Uber pet has to be restrained, got to be on a leash. If there's any cleaning afterwards, you will be charged for that, so don't worry about that. Your pet, you know, doesn't do the right thing, they're going to charge you for that. And then you get $6 extra it costs for your pet to ride.
Oh.
It costs $6 extra yep. for your pet to ride?
Yep.
$6 wow.
surcharge.
Really not that bad. I would almost think more because of all the hair that you're yeah. probably going to have to deal with.
$6? It yeah. seems high for me. It depends on how far you're going.
Well, $6 per, like, mile or something?
No,
or
no,
just
per animal.
Per
animal.
Did you put the animal in the trunk? Probably not.
No.
Oh, jeez.
I'm just asking out loud.
What? Steve. That's not humane. But obviously, service animals excluded, so that doesn't count. So there
you go. I used to go to the drive-in in the trunk. That was humane.
Trunk, I'm thinking like a sedan trunk. Are you thinking like an SUV trunk where they're still out in the open kind of in the car, but in the back?
I think he was talking about the trunk.
I was thinking. I was kidding.
All right, crossing guard of the year. Do you have a favorite crossing guard growing up, or do you have one now? They're taking nominations during this Crossing Guard Awareness Month, and you can actually vote for Crossing Guard of the Year. So Chicagoans can select who they want, go online, and you can vote for that. Last year's winner, Roxy Calhoun, who served as a crossing guard for Coonley and St. Benedict Schools.
Up on the north side, right?
Yeah,
St. Ben's?
That's right, St. Ben's area. Mm.
I've never met a crossing guard.
I never had a crossing guard.
I did. Miss Bradovich. Isn't that weird? I still remember her name.
Yeah. My town didn't value their children as much.
No. They locked them in cars. We've heard about this. So the Leaning Tower in Niles
isn't
this a great story? National Registry of Historic Places. Here it comes. They're going to put the Leaning Tower there in Niles. They're going to add it to the list. That's pretty cool. Seems like the right thing to do. You have to meet some certain criteria, though, here. You have to be associated with an event that has contributed significantly to history or historical figures.
So would that be the real Leaning Tower, or?
I don't know.
I mean, To me, it's sort of kitschy. Is that the right word? Or tacky? Or
A little bit, but it's there, and you kind of love it.
It is there. It's there, yeah.
You know, you have to. Notorious RBG exhibit opens at the Illinois Holocaust Museum, so there's something there to check out.
And I saw a bus ad for that already.
You did?
Yeah.
You guys, I was talking about this in the newsroom, and I'm locking pets in trunks and now taking on RBG, so I'm doing
here
this for
goes.
You. Isn't it, and can you think of there ever having been a Supreme Court justice who has been so celebrated in
especially
his or
by young
her
people.
Lifetime? And I'm not sure it's, I mean, I don't mean that it's necessarily, I mean, there's Thurgood Marshall, obviously, a great leader, but there, I don't think there were art exhibits and movies about him while he was alive.
No, not
it
my
It just
lifetime.
Seems a little, it's kind of odd to me.
Yeah, it's not in my lifetime. I can't think of one. It's a great question. And she is. She's celebrated. Western Illinois University is offering a cannabis growing minor in the School of Agriculture there in Macomb. And so they're trying to capitalize on the growing need for people to work in the cannabis industry.
I just think of my friends who went there 30 years ago. They could have they could have graduated so much earlier.
Kind of was a minor back there. They did it a little differently. They handled it a little differently.
You just audited the class.
I think we're going to wrap it up there. Nice to talk to you guys. And thank you for participating in Trending Topics. We're going to check in with Ro Khan at the top of the hour, see what's coming up in his on his show, and then also get the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.